Last session of the day. We are obviously over time, right? So we're going to have a... Yes, indeed. So we're going to combine this a little bit with the pita pit. From a resonance perspective, from a pain point perspective, this is also our global OTT panel, and I'm very pleased to have the three of you up here. We had a wonderful panel prep call. Take 1 second to introduce yourselves, because obviously we should just dig right in, and we're just going to dive right into the end.
Cool. I'll be quick then. Yep. Jim Riley, I head up revenue for a company called BitMax. Thanks, Paul, for the endorsement. We are a managed service provider. We lean heavily on tech. We are big believers in automation and integration with other vendors in the supply chain. We support both content companies and platform partners, and we derive revenue from both, and we'd like to think one-on-one equals more than two.
I'm Josh Pine. I'm here to represent the content owner side of the business, but I come from both sides. My background's on both sides. I was with Sony NMS, then moved over to Sony Pictures, where I built out a division that aggregated about 25 plus labels for digital distribution, global digital distribution, and then took that over to Alliance Entertainment when Sony sold our division called Distribution Solutions, and then built out their digital distribution platform.
Alex Otero with Pixelogic Media. We're an end-to-end media service provider for localization and distribution across many different channels, so all the way from digital cinema, home entertainment, OTT, down to physical media.
Oh, and I also have negotiated supply chain deals with both these guys.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Don't hold it against us.
No, we shan't. Interesting conversation that we just had in the last session, and maybe let's start there, because... You know, the idea of the scale piece of this, right, obviously with the big players is one piece, but along the lines of the 1,000 pie thing I mentioned in the intro, right, the idea is that that's our 1,000 pies, right? I mean, we're pretty stable in terms of the big players and what they need to do, and we need to talk a little bit about that. But when you think about the idea of, you know, first of all, spreadsheets and that whole issue, right? The reality is it's there, right? That's also what we talk about tomorrow, right? Get it out of email and spreadsheets, get it onto a platform. That makes it smarter. It really makes it more data actionable. But the question is how do we approach that from an industry perspective in terms of education? You know, where do you think we need to go with these independent channels, knowing that if you aggregate them all, it's only a certain portion of the overall larger ecosystem?
Well, yeah, and I can speak to that on the content owner side. When we were even at Sony with major systems at Sony Pictures, it was still very difficult to track everything. We actually, at a point when you're managing and aggregating 25 plus labels into every platform globally out there, and didn't have access at the time to, you know, whether it's a film track or rights line, or, you know, any of those, we literally had, you know, propeller heads in there behind their computers linking together, like maxing out 4 Excel spreadsheets, you know, entire spreadsheets, and crashed them. And like, we were crashing computers all the time. And so the point that Michelle made about getting to a more automated system has to happen as all these platforms continue to bifurcate and have so many different options, and keeping track of that all. So, you know, with that comes then more efficiencies of these rights tracking platforms, and hopefully that brings down costs to Lisa's point, that it becomes a cost-affordable method for the independents who are already being squeezed in terms of their profit margins on these channels and these platforms, where whether the license fee price is coming down, or the cost per minute that you get on an Amazon Prime feed is coming down as well, which was talked about in the previous platform.
Oh, and if you think about, go ahead, Alex, if you were to chime in.
No, just going to mention that when you look at it, you know, across the supply chain, you also want to take advantage of, again, being at a place like this where you can hear about other technologies, other platforms, whether it's something you're going to license or partners that you want to work with that potentially can help alleviate some of those challenges that you might face. I don't think there's necessarily any one-size-fit-all solution. It all depends on your needs as a business. You have unique requirements based off of, again, how you're going to manage your requirements. But it's good to, again, get familiar with what the available technologies, platforms, vendors are, and see that which one of those is going to, again, be the best fit for you.
Sure. But it speaks also to the aggregator model, right? The idea also that, first of all, you know, that piece of the market, they need to have that professional experience. They need to be led also, right? Because, you know, that's a big piece also. Yeah, you have experience also in the music business around this as well, right? But the idea is this piece of the business has commoditized so quickly, right? That's really why we were looking at this as an industry and saying, not how do we stop the commoditization of it? That cat's already, you know, that's already out of the bag. That's already out of the stable. But the idea is how do we morph our business so that it becomes more relevant and meaningful to our customers to engage in that relationship, and it's not just an automated workflow.
That's right. There are customers that we work with today who have the wherewithal to take on some of their own distribution, and so we encourage that to the extent they can. We support that. But we're much more interested in talking about what the opportunities are, not just how do you do it yourself to support, say, a TVOD platform or an SVOD platform, but all of it. You have to be in every platform to think about exploiting your content across all those. How do you do that? Through systems, through orchestration. And we have a tool that we use called Maestro that helps us manage that on both sides. Both our content partners and our distributor partners take advantage of using it to access the transparency of information in those environments. Smaller folks like that, and I think what they say is ultimately when they're using a platform like that, they're able to step up to the next level of, I can now handle the complexity of these different windows, and they are still windows, right? You generate as much revenue as you can on TVOD, you might move to SVOD and then to AVOD after that. Excuse me. And they need tools to be able to support that in a meaningful way. So sometimes they start off saying, I can do some of this on my own, and I can do some of it through your platform, but maybe I'm better off incorporating it all into that systematized tool that they can then see the access to all those different edge points and make more sense of it and monetize it more quickly.
But when you get down also to the crux of the tool, right, the idea is, Do we need the standards bodies around it? Are we moving so fast in this business that by the time we finally sit around a table and actually agree to something, the fundamental nature of the issue has changed simply because of technology? And as more people migrate into these platform experiences, right, that couple in terms of automation, how do we keep up? You know, that's really the issue. You know, look, the days were easy when there was just one gigantic provider, right, that nobody else was competing with, really. I think we all know who that is. But the idea is, as our business proliferates and we see, okay, maybe now we have 8, we have 10 major providers, right? More are rolling on. But that's not necessarily the crux of some of the issue. That has different scale challenges. I just look at it like we're potentially talking about thousands of providers when you start talking about the world. And it's like, how are you going to service somebody that, oh yeah, we only have, 18,000 subscribers, but this is what we do with this community and this piece?
I think when we talk about automation and, again, how to deal with content at this scale, really, when you have something that's deterministic, again, whether it's one spec or 20 specs or 100 specifications, really, again, it's deterministic. So you can build a profile, you can automate that, put that into your pipeline, and start to build a scale around that. I think one of the larger complexities that is a little more difficult to handle, especially, say, for some of the smaller providers, is when you start to generate unique requirements, right? So it's not just a matter of deterministic transform of content, it's creation of new content. So whether it's new wraparound metadata or artwork, or other types of content, and ultimately we haven't really broached on localization. Again, if you're going to go global, you have to create content, localized content, to service that. So really, I think that's where a lot of the challenges start to come into play. And again, as we look at new OTT services spinning up, if they're creating unique requirements, that creates a little bit of a barrier to entry. And how can we, again, get this into much more of the automated pipeline, keep that scale, that's there, and essentially service content that's already available, as opposed to necessarily creating new content?
Well, it's interesting also because you talk about TVOD, SVOD, AVOD, right? The idea is the backbone is essentially the same, right?
Indeed.
And so you had some experience in the early days of Cable Labs and Ubiquiti, right? That idea where you had a real instrumental hand, and I think the Cable Lab standard was a bellwether, right? It was like, finally, light.
It was. In fact, early days, there were a couple of companies. There's a few of us in the audience who probably still remember them. Diva and Entertainer. That was the early days, right? There was a complete stack. It was hardware, software, plus content. But all I really had was some studio content, which is very valuable, don't get me wrong, and kids' content and maybe a little mature content. what really happened to kind of kick things off is when the MSOs, kind of led by Steve Burke over at Comcast, said there's going to be this thing called Burke Vision. And it was his idea of taking HBO and Showtime content and surfacing that on an on-demand basis very, very quickly. Well, now those two platforms had to support the entertainer version and the diva version, and it got really expensive, and the business model changed. Those guys are paying for the cost of that content, not the operators. So they said, we got to come together as a team. The cable community was able to come together because they weren't competing, right? In one respect, they had their different franchise areas. So they collaborated a lot more regularly and uniformly. And some of the people that were supporting that over at our shop was TVN back in those days, later changed to Ubiquity. But we came up with ultimately a standard that could be used across the industry, and everyone started to adopt it. And we started to push forward with that in a way that was, you know, it made it easy or easier for the basic cable networks to step up when it was time for them to supply content into those platforms. So you have a different scenario today. You have companies who are competing head-to-head against one another. And when I look at what the complexities are, say, of the Peacock spec that's just recently coming out, and frankly, it's still coming together, it's different than what Xumo requires or what Pluto requires or Tubi or any other players. And there's a reason for that, because Comcast and or NBC, Peacock's identified a need to promote their content a certain way and present it a certain way. And I don't want to restrict that. We want to help them do that. We want to help our content partners support that opportunity. And there's something special about iTunes Extras. It's not available anywhere else, but it's a really good promotional vehicle on Apple. So we support those every way we possibly can. The reality is you're not going to have the same kind of spec environment that we had when we were building VOD back in the day. They're going to be different. You have to find the threads that make them common and try to synthesize that into the workflow in a way that makes it easy for both parties. But I think we're going to see a lot of disparate versions, and then they will come together over time, especially as this acquisition process continues.
Sure. And I can expand upon that in terms of the independent world, too, what makes things a lot tougher and why we're seeing all these different specs. If we go back to our early days back in VHS and DVD, if you were an independent, unless you had a vendor number at Walmart, you couldn't sell directly to Walmart, right? And we're seeing that now all over again on the digital side, where, you know, unless you have a relationship and vendor agreement with iTunes, you can't just go and take that out anymore. You need to go through a sublicensor like BitMax. And that's great for this side of the digital supply chain, but what happens is you have the independent space, which has always led the creative side of our business. What's popular today really results from, you know, 2 years, 3 years ago, from some video like, you know, that really hit with people and took off, some of these cult followings. Like I was involved in the launch of, what was that vampire series? Twilight series, and you know that became like a cult following, and eventually became a big thing for Lionsgate. But it started off very small and organically built. Point being is that the creative content, the independent content, drives the business. And if they can't get onto some of these platforms like Netflix and even the AVOD platforms are becoming more picky as to the content they're taking. It's like shoving tons of water through a small hose. It's gonna leak out. And so people are finding their own ways to publish this stuff because there is a need for it. But unless you have the cast and the quality of talent and production budgets to drive an analysis and whatnot by the big platforms which they look at to take content in, you're not going to get on. And so you could make a really good movie with a $1 million production budget, but if it doesn't have the talent, it's not going to make. It's not going to hit those analytics. So how do you get it out there? And that's why you have platforms like Snowflake and other outlets that change specs and deviate from what everybody else is doing.
So let's shift gears and talk about the big business in front of us and some of the scale challenges that we have around this. I mean, Alex, do you see emerging technology as this magic bullet, magic elixir, something that will rescue us from this situation, or do you see pain points along the way until we kind of quote-unquote figure it out?
I'd like to think that it's a panacea for everything, but the truth is that, you know, it's there to help and augment, you know, part of the process. And, you know, again, when we have deterministic parts of the pipeline, if you're not automating that, it's really something you want to try to take advantage of. But the other thing that we want to take a look at is that technology is meant to essentially bolster process at the end of the day. You can't create that technology without understanding the process that underlies it to create that part of the automated supply chain. And I think one of the areas that not necessarily hinders, but it might be overlooked, is an over-reliance sometimes on, again, creating an automated pipeline and having faith that content will just flow through exactly as expected. You need to be able to understand that there's always going to be exception cases. There's on and off ramps to part of this pipeline. How do you handle those exception types of scenarios and plan for them gracefully? And I think one of the interesting things, you know, to be looking at as we move forward, again, at really automating so many parts of this, is empowering the users as part of the process. So we want to, you know, essentially remove people from where, again, it's entirely repeatable, but when you need to handle these exception scenarios, where can you have somebody, again, handle that intervention part gracefully as part of the system, as opposed to, again, taking something out and then trying to put it back in?
We talked about also subscriber levels and all that business, and this is really where the globe comes into play, right? When you talk the difference between 300 million here in the States and 7 billion in the world, right? We say, oh, we got 120 million subscribers on Netflix, or 80 million here, 60 million. Regardless of the million, right, it still doesn't have a B on it. And the idea is it just going to go out and you know, spread out and have a million little communities? And if that's the case, how do we expect to wrangle those people to say, hey, we don't want to do this 8 billion different ways?
Yeah, again, I think that...
Alex, solve all of our problems right here, right now, on this stage. Come on.
No, I think, you know, Movie Labs is one of the bodies that's helped put a good framework around trying to get some standards around here. I think that, again, as much as you can have a standard to help drive this, that's fantastic. I think that, again, an expectation of there always being a standard and everybody converging isn't necessarily the reality.
But do you think somebody, you know, some Nigerian OTT company that actually has millions of subscribers is going to give two shakes about what Movie Labs does over here? Wouldn't they listen to a large provider and say, and by the way, the idea is we do have some very large providers, right, that have very straightforward, this is our spec, right? I mean, that's the question mark. It's almost like a boiling the ocean issue, right? And if you think about the disconnect between us here and some rest of the world, it gets dicey. Go ahead, Jim.
So we support platforms all over the world, and companies that we talk to have varying levels of expertise and, you know, experience in thinking through processes. You know, many of them have not heard of you know, the EMA avails.
Yeah.
It's a shocker, but they still have not.
We know it very well, by the way.
Right.
You know, we don't need to re-educate ourselves around that, right? But how do you go out and push that spec?
Well, you start talking about it. You start talking about what their specs are, what they require, and you say, well, we got this. It's kind of close. It's pretty close. Can we tweak it a little bit? Can we work together and find the same lanes? So we work with those partners. But I will say this, the international community, I think of them as my younger kids, and the North American distributors mostly as my older kids. They know a little more. I can handle a few things. They understand what avails are. They know that some of them actually have amazing systems, like, you know, the MediaMorph system to handle the avails piece. If they have that, then they can hook into mine, because I'm hooked into the WIP Media platform. So there's ways to think about how you can work together, whereas these international platforms, Rakuten is just getting started with their AVOD offering. They have 17 different countries, different languages to deal with, different directions in terms of what they're trying to achieve on each of those platforms. They don't know all these processes, so we work with them a little more carefully. We hold their hands a little more. We spend a little more time with them. I mean, we work them up to that level, and then we introduce them to our partners. There are other vendors in the ecosystem that can make their lives easier and then our lives easier because they're using those tools. It's a long, slow process.
Well, you know, and the other thing also is I do want to talk about some pain points, right? Because the idea of localizing content globally, you know, global day and date, you know, the just-in-time delivery and the idea that we're careening towards this tsunami of content, right, that we can see, it's out there, right? You can almost see that big wave, right? But it's out there. And the question mark is what do we do as a business to prepare ourselves? And you know, it may not be, oh, just, you know, throw everything into the closet and get it off get it off the ground immediately. I mean, this could be the time where we really talk about sea change for what we do. Because, by the way, our problems in home entertainment or TVOD, SVOD, AVOD, it starts getting exponential also when you think about broadcast. And we have a whole entire broadcast community that also isn't tied into all of this necessarily, right? So, you know, it's interesting, and I'll tie it back also to the beginning, because maybe this is a part where we take smaller pieces of the puzzle and figure out those smaller bits, right? I mean, by the way, figuring out ITER is a huge deal, right? Now, and it's not the 10-year-old ITER of when it launched, right? It's like now we're thinking about nuance and we're thinking along the right lines around what that platform does and serve. And honestly, it's meant to make people's lives easier and more efficient, right? So the question mark is what do we need to focus on? What are those pieces that at least from a company perspective or a personal perspective, where you're like, this needs a tweak. And I think that's also what the pain point session was really meant to be about, is like, what's a problem? You know, localization. Maybe it's not. I can't speak for these companies, but.
I think the scale around localization is obviously one of the daunting question marks. But to kind of drive back to one of the other points that was brought up earlier, you know, and one of the things that I think folks are starting to handle pretty well is, at the end of the day, asset normalization. You can bring your assets in, normalize them, and then again start to push them back out. You brought up ITER, and I think ITER is like the tip of the iceberg in terms of data normalization, right? Yeah. Like that's just the first part of where we can now start to normalize our title databases and start to sync some information across there. But there's so much other information that really needs to be part of that supply chain, because again, you're dealing with multiple partners, vendors, even within the studios, you've got other divisions in there that are all creating their own sets of data that are not necessarily direct sidecars of the asset, but contain some information that's relevant to another part of the supply chain. And how do we ensure that that gets normalized so we can take advantage of it in other parts? And again, ITER is that first part of trying to bring it together. But you think about the scale, and we're talking about again, just features and episodic content here, but you start to bring in trailers and bonus materials. Again, there's a whole bunch of wraparound content that is part of this process, and all of that data, again, needs to be normalized.
I think where it turned the corner also was, it's not one ID to rule them all, right? That's the whole point. It's like, you know, when I got into those ITER meetings initially, I said, you know, you're supposed to be the Rosetta Stone. You're supposed to be the traffic Rosetta Stone, so that no matter where it comes from or where it's going, it's got a path. It's almost like, you know, mapping tables, right? But it's also meant to be extensible, right? So that it doesn't just end and that's it. Oh, fine, we got an ITER. All right, we're over. We're done. We're moving, right? So, you know, are there other pieces of the business that could, you know, I could point to also LMT, which Yona from HBO, right? 140 languages. We thought, I was just like, this seems very simple, right? Very small little piece. But then you start saying, oh, well, this just isn't for delivery. This could be for cameras. And then everybody else gets involved and says, hey, we need these specs. We need something to, that's why I'm thinking, is it the chip away? Is that what's going to get us there? Or do we need a couple of really big fish to come in and say, this is the way we're going
to
do it?
I think to Jim's point earlier, at least on the other side from the studios and the independent world, it's through education, a lot of education of the labels, of the producers, to Lisa's point earlier, just haphazardly putting stuff in that doesn't meet any spec requirements. So when you have aggregators out there, like we were at Sony Pictures, and then going in, funneling 27 labels with anywhere from 3 to 10 releases a month, you look at that scale, you got to teach the people, all right, you got to get your shit together, and you're going to be much better off in the long run. And then working with suppliers like these guys, then it becomes more standardized. But at the end of the day, you've coached your labels, you've coached your producers, and that's how the word spreads.
To the chip away model, let me just answer it real quick. Just one thing comes to mind. When we started working with the different AVOD partners out there, they can do their own ad breaks. You can give a piece of content, and they'll make the breaks.
Yep.
Takes time for them. They might get it right. They might get it kind of right. We do it for all of our content now, so that when it comes, it's clean. They know it. It's attached. It's associated with the asset. There's no mistaking what's going on there. That's a little change that's made a huge impact on smoothing the process with those platforms. I think it's a lot more of those, and then some big ideas. And the big ideas are taking data and including that and using that. But again, it doesn't speak right to your point about all these thousands of different models. But some of the big players need help too. They need reminders. I mean, NBC is Comcast. Comcast is NBC. They were involved in defining the cable specs with Dave Bartolone there years ago, back 2002 and 2003. And here we are again. You know, you look back at the history, we're repeating it right now. We're doing some things that are more complex than they need to be in some scenarios. You got to bring them along.
Because we're familiar with it. And I think that's the other piece is like, how do we break that familiarity? Pain points, right? It comes down to pain points, right? Anybody raise a hand. What's a pain point? Pain point. You picked the one pain point that's right in my wheelhouse. I'm not supposed to be the expert up here, but cybersecurity, by the way, we're launching the control framework for app and cloud for the entire industry. It will be public. It's launching in April, and it's around the Trusted Partner Network. And what it does is it maps to every single other cybersecurity framework and standard. So if you are FedRAMP or you're SOC 2 or you're PCI, you don't have to answer all those questions again. And it's like, show us your certification. Half of that is from a compliance perspective. The other half goes around the practical need of what do we need in the space. We should talk, though, because this isn't the cybersecurity group, but the thing around Article 17 and the digital single market in the EU and what's going on around watermarking is huge. And I thought also Michelle's solution is absolutely inventive and very cool because it's baked into the process. Other pain points? Yes. Localization. By the way, have you seen also that the translator and the recognized market is crushed, and it's basically you can't make a living wage if you're a translator out there? That is a pain point. That's huge.
It is true. And I would also say that, every localization vendor is not the same, right? If you're going to Netflix, you better make sure you get the right one because it'll be very costly to have to do that again. Issues you probably already know.
Alex?
Yeah, and again, there's so many things going on in the localization space because everybody's clamoring against a limited set of resources right now. And hopefully that's a pool that will grow globally. I think, again, just to harken back that automation is going to help out on some of that, feeding that content out. Forensic watermarking is actually a huge part of this for content security, especially the cost associated with that. It's a problem that we dealt with a little while back of just creating that scale and accountability across that part of the supply chain. But I think there needs to be, you hear the adage that there's better, faster, cheaper, and you can pick two.
Pick two, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, really across that part of the supply chain, like, that's one where we're really looking at that. And, the hope is that soon enough, as we get further and further down the pipeline on really the global part of this, that we'll finally get the third part instead of saying that you only had to pick two, you get the benefit of the third. But really, there's a little bit of a compromise right now to be able to handle the scale and the needs that the global marketplace is requiring.
Look what's happened in the M&A space around localization, right? And the idea is, all right, how do we wrap this up? How do we roll this up so that we can actually scale? But it's chicken and egg, right? I mean, that's the other issue. It's like, uh-oh, where do we go? Pain point? Come on, pain point? Give me one. One pain point. Look, 11 years ago when we started HITS, right, there were a couple of companies where everybody got together and we're like, we spent literally $1 billion-plus dollars and we're still having these issues. 10 years later, 11 years later, the issues remain, right? But with the caveat that the progress that was made over those 11 years totally outshone everything that had happened previous to that in the IT space. Legacy systems is critical. And I'm also somebody also says institutional knowledge. How do we keep the institutional knowledge while we transition to a younger workforce, right? And it used to be about, oh, that won't happen under my watch. That'll happen after I retire, right? But you lose some of that institutional knowledge. I feel also that it's our responsibility in terms of where we are not to let that go and die. But at the same time, we need to start thinking about blowing that shit up. It's hard also because, and by the way, this isn't a vendor or a content owner, right? It's on both sides of the fence. The difference being is the vendor, if you haven't kept up, you do, you know, you have to realize, okay, this is part of my exit. But the content owner situation around this is huge. Joshua,
I was just going to say, it's even harder when you're at a studio like I was at Sony, where you're dealing with legacy systems that were built by themselves, that they refused to go outside their ecosystem, and they force that down your throat. And some of it works very well, but some of it doesn't talk to anything else in the industry, and you have to put everything through it, and it becomes a major pain point, especially when you're trying to put a ton of, like I've been harping on with the aggregated content, you know, the big studios have, you know, a limited amount of releases a year, and they fill their pipeline with the third-party stuff, and that can just, with those systems, can clog the entire channel.
But this is what also is freaky about, you know, look, it used to be like, oh, I got 75 titles coming through the pipeline. It's like, wow, that's massive, right? And then look what's going on now, right? If you don't have triple digits, you might as well get out of the game. Go ahead.
But I think that ties together, like, several of the different points that at the end of the day, when you have those legacy systems, like, this gets back to, again, part of that data normalization. You have information that is relevant in those that you don't want to have to recreate from scratch. How can you take advantage of that content? Again, you have folks that were around that understood why that process was put in place. You're at a point where hopefully you're turning around to, again, add in an automation part of this. So take a look at that process. Understand why was that put in place. Speak to the folks that essentially helped scope that system and determine whether it's time to blow it up or, you know, pick out a little piece apart, you know, that actually is relevant, and then ignore the rest and, again, salvage the data that you need. So
it's so classic also on the AI and machine learning piece of it. It's like, oh, those are the buzzwords, right? You know, and buzzwords come and go. You know, I was the second screen society. Hello, I rode that bubble, right? But the reality also is when is enough, right? I mean, the idea is it is automation, and it's something also where that backbone piece of it, right? If you don't have that in your equation or in your movie, but I don't see many people that don't. But the idea is, that war's lost.
Well, you talk again about localization and where is the end game for that to be able to hit that scale again? Like, that's where it's not quite there yet, you know. But you start to look at what is unfolding with AI and ML and how it can help augment the space. And again, maybe it's just helping a small portion of it at this time. And you start to look at again, like, what's going on in terms of translation, say between like Nordics, you know, so let's say English to Finnish isn't that great, but Swedish to Finnish is actually pretty good. So again, there's a lot of opportunities that are going to start to unfold over time in that space. And it's not a matter of, again, like, you need to blow everything up on that space right now, but how can we gradually start to see where the worth is in those workflows and then start to augment, you know, where they make sense?
Pain point. Come on. Give me a pain. Oh, go ahead, Steve. You got another one? Yep.
The Wild West.
Yeah. But, you know, the other thing also is you don't want to stifle innovation, right? But at the same time, sometimes you're just like, really? Pain point. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a good point Steve brings up. Visibility within our own systems, you know, Steve's system, our system, you know, Alex's system, we have that, right? And we expose that to our partners and to our vendor partners, and we open that. But going across from Steve's system to our system or your system to our system, that's a little scarier still, right? Because that's still guarded and perceived as my information, my data. The reality is for companies like ours, service partners, none of it's our data. You know, the content provider's data, the platform data. Ours is what we add to it. That information is ours. But beyond that, we ought to be able to come up with some that can line up and we can share. It's a big step, I think.
I'm doing a whole spiel on that also tomorrow. That's my intro thing. But I'll give a little taste. But
Yeah, just, I mean, a couple extra notes on that, and Josh was alluding to how even at a studio, again, you have separate systems that aren't necessarily talking to each other. So again, like when you're when you're going across partners, and Craig Seidel isn't here, right. But I'd love to see, you know, movie labs potentially engage in something like that, where again, like there's a common language of how to exchange some of this data. It's not just from vendor to vendor, it's like from vendor to studio, because studio A, B, C, and D have different ways of consuming the data. We're all mapping it differently, creating that normalization table again of how do we push that across and create that visibility, and everybody gets to take advantage of like the visibility across the supply chain, I think ends up becoming a good thing.
I feel also it's cultural and it's a part of what we are and where we've come from. So my point was, a couple years ago I talked about what's the next age, right? Went from the industrial age to the information age, and now we're on the next big age. And I feel also that it's the age of transparency, and that idea of it's not bad to share that. You know, again, eroding perceived competitive advantage. We're going back, right back to square one, right? It's like, what part of that data reveals your secret sauce? If there is no secret sauce in that data, it should be open. It should be transparent. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, it's interesting with the whole transparency thing. I've spent the last 6 months or so dabbling on the production side of the movies, working with some producers in New York on a couple projects. And what I found very interesting on that side of the fence is they're out there, they're making movies, they're producing these movies, and they have no clue what goes on our side of the fence. And there's no transparency. They kind of like, they make a movie, they throw it up over the fence, and however it lands, and they get their, you know, they hope they get the right profits reported. So, you know, one of the things I've been looking at in my consulting gig is looking at how do we open up that transparency all the way through from the inception of the content all the way through the distribution. Yeah. It really hasn't been done on a non-studio level.
Yep, absolutely. And by the way, it's inception, and this is also tomorrow at Smart Content, to infinity. There is no end.
Right.
There is no, you know, this doesn't end someplace. I don't see us saying, oh, let's take that off, and we'll wait another 15 years, and we'll do a 15-year anniversary of, you know, the Jay and Silent Bob reboot. That's done. It's over. So it's really inception to infinity, and as this library grows, it's only going to be more data, more numbers, more ones, more zeros, et cetera.
That's a good point, because I remember just 15 years ago, whatever it was, we used to say inception to iPod. That was the end.
That's right.
Right? And now it's...
Yeah. Well, that meant infinity.
Right.
Right? Yeah. The idea also of, you know, we don't box this stuff up and put it in an Iron Mountain anywhere. All right. It's time to start drinking again. Thank you, by the way. Thank you to this great closing panel. We were supposed to have an hour up here, and we got about 30 minutes, so I thank you for doing the short shift on this. This is the beginning, you know, this is really the beginning of, and I don't think this would be the last Supply Chain Academy. It was certainly a good exercise from a conversation perspective, but we have a lot of work to do. This is going to be, it's going to be an interesting few years as we sort through these initial building block conversations. So, thanks to the panelists. Thanks for you. You guys are all rock stars for sticking around.